Reconvene the city council meeting, and we will continue up with our agenda where we left off. Next item is consent calendar. Does any member of the council wish to pull an item or member of the public? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent calendar.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to updates from the city manager. Mr. Lewis.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. A few updates. One, the storms over the weekend, we had nearly 4 inches of rain, and your staff was deployed a good bit in that. They did cause a few problems. This slide is a home on Graves Creek that you can see in this picture where a large oak tree fell over and onto a home, and so that was unfortunate. Otherwise, we had a few culverts off the road, and again, they served you very well. Galaxy Theater opened to the public last weekend, so if you haven't seen your movie, go see it. Go see it right now. There's a late showing at 10 o'clock. Come tonight. This is the place to be.
We'll make it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry?
We're going to make it.
You got it. Frank Remkes, the CEO of Galaxy Theaters, called us today, gave us some specifics. He's beaming. The attendance really just shattered what they hoped, and it was the number one theater in the county all weekend long. And so I think that we will see that for a very long time. So there is space for lease. Please lease your space right now and get your restaurant in there. The PD volunteers assisted us in the rain, parking cars, and so they were just troopers out there directing traffic and making sure people had a good experience. There's a parking map in front of you. You'll notice that's what we gave to the people coming in. We wanted them to have a good experience. On the back of the parking map is a list of all the restaurants in town. So you could be Councilmember Clay, so people could see where to eat in town after they finished their movie. And that was just great. So thank you to the PD volunteers. If you see them, that is just an incredible group. Walmart, the public comment period ended last Friday on the draft EIR. The comments received have been forwarded to our consultant to prepare for formal responses. That's the next process. The consultant will need 2 weeks to review the comments before we are able to determine how long the responses to comment and the process will take. Once the responses are completed, the final EIR will be prepared and the project scheduled for hearings, and that could be in May or June. I wanted to remind you that there is a joint redevelopment agency and city council meeting next week. That's a fifth Tuesday. This is from direction out of your strategic planning workshop that you wanted code enforcement. So we'll be going over with you how it's working and what changes have been done this past year. Regarding the historic City Hall project, there's a lot of work still being completed. Basement and concrete wall and floor demolition have been completed. Lead abatement has been completed. We've had several pre-bid meetings, job walks, and meet and greets with interested local contractors. We're still really trying to make sure the local contractors have a great shot at this project. As far as upcoming activities, one will be public and very visible. I think that's what people have been waiting for. And that will be the penthouse demolition. And so this will be external demolition that I think people really will take notice. That occurs next week. Just as a notice to the public, there will be people on the roof in white suits. There is some possible asbestos in some of the materials there, so they'll be crawling around. But our contractor does that, and we don't believe there'll be any reason that that would not be safe. But people may see that on the roof, and so that's to be expected. And there'll be pre-bid meetings for elevator, fire protection, and plumbing packages coming up shortly. Back to Galaxy Theater real quick. Ms. Cox would have read this. She had to leave. But this was something Frank Remkes also shared. This was a post on a Facebook, the Galaxy Theater Atascadero Facebook wall. Someone wrote, "We took our 3.5-year-old to his very first movie on Sunday. He had never been in a theater, so this was a big deal. It was so cute to see him with the big bag of popcorn in his lap because it went up to his nose, and he insisted on holding it by himself. The people around him all laughed when he said, 'Mom, this is a good movie,' because the lights were still on and the ads were the only thing on the screen. After the lights went down and the movie had been for about 45 minutes, he crawled into my lap and fell asleep." So he loved the ads. And the ads were Colby Jack, A Great Place to Eat Lunch, and Greg Malik Real Estate. So he liked those. Either Sam Blakesley's office or Cacho, our assemblyman's office, and with the League of Cities, the proposal to eliminate redevelopment agencies is still alive. And so the theater across the street would be yet but a dream if there was not redevelopment. The pedestrian bridge, streetscape, Lewis Avenue Bridge, all of your stimulus programs, those are all redevelopment funded and all in jeopardy. And so If members of the community are concerned about those programs, they need to make sure that Senator Blakeslee and Assemblymember Ajadian are well aware of that. We must keep pressure on the legislature. The good news is that there is a possible compromise that is gaining some steam, proposed by the California Redevelopment Agency. 66% of agencies have indicated some support for this, and the compromise is something along the lines of, for a percentage of tax increment being diverted to your schools and your community to offset the cost of schools, then you would receive an extra year of redevelopment life. Remember, redevelopment agencies have a natural end date. And so every percent you contributed towards the schools and away from the redevelopment agency for a period of a short period of years, you would add life to the agency. We have received some word that there are members that are interested in that. That proposal actually almost generates as much money as the eradication of redevelopment agencies themselves. And so we will continue to keep you posted of that and continue to fight for proposals that keep redevelopment in existence. The last part of our report is Warren has some just terrific stuff to share with you about the permit roadmap that you saw.
Yes, thanks, Jim. Council members, I also want to give you a quick update just on the downtown parking strategy. We had weekend directing people to the Rabobank parking lot as well as down to the Sunken Gardens for overflow parking. We have, as a staff, met with Galaxy Theaters. We met with Frank and Rita last week before the opening just to make sure we're all coordinated about the parking. We will continue to do that to make sure we're both on the same page about how to deal with that. Jim's met with Rabobank and did gather an agreement to expand the amount of parking that's available. So now the entire parking lot at Rabobank is available on the weekend. So that basically added another 100 parking spaces to the area. And as Jim mentioned, we did put together this map that's available for the public that shows the primary parking being around the theater, the secondary parking area being at Rabobank, and then overflow parking being available at Sunken Gardens. This map's available on the city website. It's also available on Galaxy's website. So if you're out of town, it's prominent. You can download it and see where you should park. And like Jim also said, we have the restaurant map included on that as well. And then the business permitting roadmap is completed, and it's ready to be handed out to the public. So I think Marcia just handed out the final product. So what you see there is the trifold glossy brochure. And then included in that, I've put in some of our new handouts that go along with it. So, for example, we now have a new handout on how to do signs in Atascadero. So it talks about all the rules, has examples, and it's a lot easier way to interpret the sign ordinance. So that's one example of the new handouts. We also have some nice little flyers about the stimulus program, the on-site inspection program, and this is really just an example of how we'll use the roadmap. So when somebody comes to the counter and they're interested in the business, opening a business or expanding a business, staff will give them the brochure, put their business card in, and then attach the additional information like these flyers so that the person leaves the counter with all the pieces and all the information they need to begin their process of opening a new business. Our downtown or our city zoning map eventually. Here it comes. So it'll take you directly to the map, and then you can see where all the commercial sites are in town. Or you can, if you want to see the zoning summary table, there's that. So basically, all you can do, we can email this to somebody, or they can download it on the website, and you just click on any of these different categories, it'll take you directly to that resource. So if you need a handout, an application, a map, any information like that, it's all readily available right there. So this will be handed out at the front counter. We've ordered a lot of copies of it, and we expect that it'll be very successful in helping to meet our economic development goals and objectives. That'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Is that it there?
We're done. Thank you, Mayor.
Well, we're just over here awe-inspired once again, right? When we think it can't get better, and we really appreciated the brochure before, now it's turned into an interactive program, and it's a good time as any to mention, I was going to say later, I've been invited to be on a panel of a few mayors from a couple of counties talking before a builders group, and you've given me some great things to brag about our community. The one thing I hear everywhere I go is that people are just amazed at how Atascadero is really the leader of the pack on streamlining the process and working with businesses. So you've made us proud once again.
Thank you.
Yep. Councilmember Clay.
Yes, certainly this map with all the parking for the Galaxy is important, but if you turn it over, we have 58 restaurants in Atascadero. They're all listed on here, folks. And, I used to say if you're going to the movies out of town, why, be sure and come back and eat in Atascadero. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Just go to the movies here. We got 58 restaurants here. Please don't tell me there's no place to eat, all right?
Thank you, Councilman Clay. And remember, if we get out of here before 10, we can actually go to those restaurants ourselves.
Well, if I say a few more words, we won't. All right. Go to our restaurants, folks. They're great.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for those staff reports. We'll move on to community forum. If anyone would like to speak to the council on an item not on the agenda, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Judy Vick, and I'm here to talk to you about putting the wireless smart meter issue on your agenda. Since I was here last several months back, a lot has happened with the wireless smart meter issue. On March 8th, due to numerous county residents' complaints of billing inaccuracies, public health risks, and security risks, the San Luis County Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to enact a resolution requesting the California Public Utilities Commission direct PG&E to immediately stop installation of wireless smart meters until an opt-out option is available to all consumers. There are now 33 California local governments formally opposed to the installation of wireless smart meters. That's 7 counties, 26 cities, 10 of which enacted local ordinances prohibiting the installation of the meters. Our county Public Health Commission voted unanimously, that's a 9-0 vote, to support the San Luis County Board of Supervisors resolution to stop installation of the meters until customers could opt out. Well, today, the CPUC announced that all of California will be able to opt out and that residents who already have the meters will also be able to opt out. However, we would like your council to take a stand on customers not having to pay to opt out of wireless meters that they never asked for, and also that the CPUC should require all utilities to provide an opt-out, not just PG&E, as water and gas companies are also installing wireless utility meters. I also want to encourage residents who have a wireless meter. We've heard testimony at the County Board of Supervisors, and I hear regularly from residents talking about health impairments from being exposed to their meters. And so I'd like to encourage residents to go to emfsafetynetwork.org to learn more about this issue and to report any health symptoms they may be having. For those that still don't believe that there's a concern as far as health risks, I'd like to tell you that the European Environment Agency, which advises 32 countries in the European Union, has called for reduced exposure to EMF. I'm going to quote from them their recommendation for all governments, the mobile phone industry, and the public to take all reasonable measurements to reduce exposure to EMF, especially to radio frequencies from mobile phones, and particularly the exposures to children and young adults who seem to be the most at risk. This is the same type of emission that is emitted from this wireless meter, and that's what's really led the charge to provide for this opt-out. So I'd really encourage people, again, to go to emfsafetynetwork.org to learn more about this issue. Thank you so much for your time.
People do not realize that their increased health problems are related. Some track their problems back to the meters. They have newly become hypersensitive to wireless environments. Now they have headaches or heart arrhythmias, sleep disturbances, skin, eye, and ear problems that increase in wireless environments. They can no longer live in their homes, work at their jobs, nor live in their communities. These meters can transmit 1 to 2 miles. Some of these people have tried to shield themselves from the smart meters without success. A retired engineer explained that this could be a function of peak power. The peak power of smart meters is 155,000 microwatts per centimeter squared, close to what Stanford reports as lethal at 200,000. PG&E says they transmit every 4 hours, but people who have measured them have found that they transmit every 45 seconds on the average, and as often as every 3 to 7 seconds. These are radio frequency nail guns, powerful, penetrating RF nail guns. PG&E says they're safe, safer than cell phones and Wi-Fi. Dan Hirsch, whistleblower for the nuclear industry, finds smart meters to be 2 magnitudes worse than cell phones. One individual measured the smart meter to be 5 times stronger than cell phones. PG&E used their instruments, but they average the transmission, so it looks like there's no danger or very little. There is no proof of safety, but there are like acceleration of any weakness a person already exhibits or aging faster. Absence of symptoms does not mean safe. People don't feel DNA damage, which increases risk of cancer, and they don't feel the breaking of the blood-brain barrier, which is an increase for Alzheimer's. We request that, like the county supervisors and health commissioners, that you agendize this to also send a resolution requesting PG&E and the PUC to stop the installation of smart meters until an opt-out is available, with no extra fee, opt-out fee, and applying to all the utilities.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Janet Tingley. I'm a teacher at Atascadero High School. I've taught at the high school since 1981. I've lived in Atascadero since 1983, and this is the first time I have chosen to speak at a city council meeting. I currently don't have... I'm going to be speaking about smart meters. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but I need to talk to you about a few things. I currently don't have a smart meter because I begged PG&E to install mine absolutely last as they were heading out of town for the next town. I was praying opt-out would be passed to protect me before this happened, and it did. My neighbor has a smart meter. What if my neighbor decides not to opt out? I have no control over my neighbor's decision, and his meter is 25 feet from my bedroom. I have fibromyalgia, and a smart meter will compromise my health. Where is it every day and not realizing it? Your insurance company will most likely not cover a fire caused by a wireless smart meter. The insurance companies understand the risk and will not take this risk. Selling your house could be compromised if the buyers don't want a smart meter and you have one. Lastly, why should our health and safety be compromised to save PG&E money from not having to pay meter readers? Do you really think the savings will be passed on to us? Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hello, my name is Dave Darge, and I'd like to make a few comments on smart meters. Hello, is that better? Okay, my name is Dave Darge, and I'd like to speak a few things about smart meters. I believe that they're not necessary. The mechanical meters that we used to have worked fine without the RF risks. Over the last 25 years, I haven't heard anybody say that their monthly bill has doubled in 1 month to the next, and now I've heard several people say that, and some of them just say they go up 33%, some 50%, and there's no explanation after you call PG&E why. Some insurance companies decided now they're not going to insure utility companies because of the risk, possible future risks that the smart meters do cause. The meters do transmit up to every 45 seconds, not every 20 minutes, as they stated previously. The meters do not meet regulations when they're installed side by side, as the law requires. Smart gas meters are not allowed to be installed. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Thank you, Council Mayor. I'm a county resident, not in the city of Atascadero. I'm an engineer from Cal Poly. I've been in communications for many, many
Could
years.
We have your name for the record? I have to check with our city clerk. Have we gotten all the names? So if you could just state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Riggs Homan. I'm sorry, I thought I did say that. But I am here. I was away on work out of the country and came home and found a smart meter on my property located just a few feet from my chiropractic table, which is very unnerving to me. I believe in holistic health, and I'm very, very disturbed that I have a meter just a few feet away from where I try and do healing. These meters, smart meters, put out bursts of energy that are not helpful to the human body. They are very harmful. And I am looking for an opt-out option with all good intention. I understand that PG&E is trying to save money, but in this case, they have spent money in the wrong way, and they should have stuck with their wired options that were originally proposed 4 years ago. And I thank you very much.
And what's the distance? What's the distance away? I mean, that you're away with your meter.
Actually, you could be quite a long distance away.
That would be how many feet?
Well, these things go for miles, and tuned to the right frequency, a sensitive receiver is going to pick this up even further away than that. So that these are bursts of radiation that is above and beyond necessary amounts. I live out in the sticks. It's over 2.5 miles to get to my mailbox. And so this meter is designed to work at levels where it is received on the other end. So in my instance, there is a very high power output from this meter, and it's much, much more frequent than what PG&E is stating. And I'm very happy that the guns of PG&E are not here.
I see. And you,
Councilman Clay?
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know that we need to follow up with questions. Well, we appreciate you bringing this to our attention, and there are some avenues to get some answers to questions that we might want to pursue.
Thank you.
So I would prefer to go forward with public comment, and we can close that and bring it back to council and consider some direction if we want. And we're still open to public comment. Welcome.
Good evening, council members. My name is Sean Miller, and I'm a resident here of Tascadero. I have a flyer here. This is not on the smart meter. This is on a separate program. My friend and I are looking to start a youth slow pitch softball program for kids. There's nothing that's ever been done like that. Funds for this program is to put on adult softball tournaments at Paloma Fields. But with the way the rates are set up right now, talking with Bradley, he informed me that it's because you guys didn't want outside groups coming in and making money off of the fields, which I totally understand. But this program that we're looking at doing is for the kids here in town, to give them another option besides fast pitch or Little League baseball. The kids that, you know, either are afraid of that or just, you know, are unable to play. This is a program that we would like to start fairly soon, which is after both Little League and Fast Pitch have started, so we're not looking to take players from those programs. But then also offer a program during the summer for these kids to participate in, because there's just not a lot for kids to do anymore. So what I'm basically doing is asking you if there's any way that the city would be able to assist us in generating revenue to build this type of program by using or having access to the fields. I don't know if it's something that we need to get on the agenda or, you know, like I say, Mr. Cherry has already donated the fields for us for the day. But,
you know, I was involved in a lot of youth sports before, and actually starting youth sports like the Babe Ruth program and the youth basketball program. And everything starts with one person, all right? And you're the one person. So you've got to get the job done, partner. That's all I got to say. Get after it.
But we do need help. Yeah. That's all I'm asking for, is possibly some help with field access.
Well, I suppose you got to come up with some sort of a proposal and then something.
Get it to staff, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
We are very supportive of youth. We happen to have a lot of youth programs competing for the same space and funds as well, but we do commend you for your effort. And I think if you continue to talk with staff, you know, they have to prioritize with the many things we have to offer out there. But thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Clark Baird. I live on San Ardo here in Atascadero. And about 6 months ago, I moved my business here from Paso Robles. I run a shop. We manufacture cast stone products, and we're on the Sycamore Industrial Complex in Sycamore. And I was just coming here to introduce myself, tell you a little bit about what we do. I live with my wife and my three young daughters, and we're excited to be a part of your guys' community. I'm a little excited to be here and listen to what you guys have to say. My company is called California Cast Stone and Masonry. I do fireplace mantles, kitchen hoods, cartouches, balustrade systems. I've been in cast stone for over 12 years, and my uncle got me into it years ago in Southern California, and I have a really a passion for the state and all over the country and in countries in the world looking at cast stone and admiring that. I graduated from Cal Poly with a degree in geography, specializing in architectural buildings and whatnot. And I've had an opportunity to work with some local builders here. I've worked with Midland Pacific Homes for years. I've done work for Rex Hendricks. Probably one of the most beautiful fireplaces I've ever done in my life is at Rex Hendricks' ranch. 30 feet tall, 10 feet wide. I just wanted to come and introduce myself and let you know that if awarded this contract and entrusting me and my employees, that I think we'll accomplish some of the things that you guys wanted to accomplish in this project by hiring local contractors, somebody that lives a mile from this building, that drives by it every day and that dreams of working on projects like this. And allow me to hire more guys and allow the money to stay here in the local economy. And I just want to let you guys know that I have the experience to work on this project and that I have the passion to do that, and that I've worked on large-scale projects like this. In the last 3 years, I've worked on a custom home in Pleasanton that had $300,000 in cast stone. I've worked on a custom home for a gentleman in San Luis Obispo that had about $300,000 in cast stone. And I do ship materials all over the state. We manufacture our own materials right here in California. We make our own molds. A lot of the molds that we do are the same type of detail that you guys have on the Rotunda building with rubber molds or urethane molds or epoxy molds. Is no problem to us. We do that every single day. And just wanted to let you guys know that I'm grateful to be a part of your guys' community. I'm hoping that
the public, it is community forum. And we will close the community forum, bring it back to council. We have no public hearings today. We do have some management reports. First one is the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board Basin Plan Septic System Amendments.
Yes, good evening, Mayor O'Malley and council. Tonight, and I'll try to be as brief as possible, but this is there's quite a bit of information here on this basin plan update. Tonight we're going to talk about the Regional Water Quality Control Board's efforts over the last few years to update the septic system rules and regulations that we follow here in town. Tonight, the recommendation really is just to receive this information, what I'm presenting tonight, what was in your council packet, and then to just direct staff if you have any additional comments from your review of the material. We are responding to a request for comments on their latest amendments. So if you were, would provide staff with any direction for that letter due this Friday. First of all, just to give a little background on what is the Basin Plan. The Basin Plan came out of several laws that were passed as far back as 1969, the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Act, and more recently in 2000, an AB 885 mandated that the state implement water quality measures and rules and regulations that would help protect both groundwater and surface water throughout California. And it covers a lot of water quality issues, and primarily the one we deal with on an almost daily basis is the portion that deals with on-site wastewater disposal. This 8312 and the waste discharge requirements that come from that allow us, or it's the state allowing us to regulate septic system approval within the city. It includes design criteria and prohibitions for where septic systems can and can't go. So the first amendment that I think most of you are aware of started back in 2008. And this amendment to the Basin Plan changed quite a few of the shoulds to shalls, and it may put a little more teeth into a lot of the regulations that over a 28-year period that the regional board struggled with. And the 2008 amendment really wanted to tighten up the regulations. It includes more testing requirements, more difficult siting criteria, design regulations, construction requirements, and changed the definition of what a water course is. And one of the probably the here in Atascadero, we've heard often of what is a blue line stream. And the blue line stream is the type of stream that shows up on a USGS map. And that's where you get the 100-foot setbacks from anything that's a blue line stream to a septic system. So in this latest revision, as an example of some of the problems in this document, the document, I'll go through several of the 2008 amendment contents. There's things like owner notifications, extensive owner notifications on where their septic systems are. That's almost like you're going to have to record documents that show where the system was installed, where the expansion area is. It's going to add time and money to the process of getting a permit. One of the most biggest impacts will be this wastewater management plans that are going to be required. And I'll, as an example, and this language up on the screen is directly out of the 2008 amendment. And I just want to pay particular attention to the type of wording that's in these amendments and how it's going to be very have a huge impact not only on the construction industry but to the city as far as our management involvement of septic systems. And I'll read this. It's on-site wastewater management plans shall, so there's no option, it shall be implemented in urbanizing areas to investigate and mitigate long-term cumulative impacts resulting from the continued use of individual, alternative, and community on-site wastewater systems. So you can imagine what investigate and mitigate means. To me and what several other agencies have concerns with is investigate and mitigate is that we're going to be required to go out and look for problems. I mean, right now, we feel like we don't really have a septic system problem. We have over 5,000 systems in the city, existing problems. And you had surfacing effluent and had a major problem throughout the community, and it needed to be addressed by much more stringent rules. That's not what we have here. Going on, this wastewater management plans, and not to paint too grim a picture, but I want the council to be aware of where this is headed. In the requirements that specifically calls out what the wastewater management plan will include, survey and evaluation of existing systems. So that will be on us to survey and evaluate 5,000 existing septic systems. So you can imagine the type of staff time, manpower. If we had to contract that out, that is an extensive undertaking to consider. Groundwater, it goes on, groundwater and surface water monitoring, an outreach program. It would all end up in increased enforcement efforts on our part. So there's a tremendous amount of administration, staffing, record keeping. It's really a fiscal nightmare for us at this point, at any point. The second, another big issue that I know affects us greatly is the second unit issue. And in the 2008 amendment, it basically says that the minimum lot area that you need to have a secondary unit is 2 acres. The staff report calls it a de facto subdivision. And so by building a secondary unit, that's what they characterize as a de facto subdivision. It's the terrain. It's possible. It's clearly possible to get a secondary unit on a smaller lot. Another example, if you had a 3-bedroom house on 1 acre, you wouldn't be able to add a secondary unit. But if you had a, let me back up, if you had a 5-bedroom house on a 1-acre lot, you could build that. But if you had a 3-bedroom house and a 2-bedroom or 1-bedroom secondary unit, you couldn't build it on that 1-acre lot by these rules, even though the septic system design criteria, from a scientific standpoint, about the amount of flow coming off of it, the type of soil you have, the same lot, makes no difference. So it's a contradiction. It contradicts the state housing's affordable housing goals, too. It's going to make it much more difficult to get secondary units in Atascadero. So the 2009 amendment really was not a big change to what they had approved in 2008. It was kind of a cleanup amendment. Talked about the implementation plan and really didn't have a lot of the teeth that the 2008 amendment did. So where are we now? In the 2008 and 2009 amendments were not approved by the state. So none of these amendments go into force or in effect until the State Water Resources Board approves the amendments. So those amendments were returned to the local Water Quality Control Board for further consideration and amendment. There's not a lot of new material in this latest amendment. Like I said earlier, the comment period closes Friday, so we need to get a response document. We want to reiterate what our concerns were in 2008 and 2009 and state again the financial difficulty that would be brought against the city if this goes into effect. And like I said, that amendment will go May 5th. There will be a hearing in San Luis Obispo in front of the local water board. We'll have an opportunity to go and present our case and state our objections again, as we have in the past. To date, we've been to all the hearings, gave input, written letters. Really, it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. We have not got, it really has not affected the document that's been reviewed and approved by the local water board. So kind of summarize some of the impacts on the community. If we don't go forward with executing a memorandum of understanding once these new regulations go into place, it's possible that if we don't agree to these, the review and approval of septic systems would go back to the regional board. So somebody was wanting to build a home that had a septic system in it in the city. If we don't execute the memorandum of understanding, they would have to submit plans to the water board, have their septic system reviewed. The water board would then be in a position to have to implement these programs. So that's a possibility. I think we have to provide a surveyed as-built of the septic system to document where it's been installed. And there may be some lots that are deemed unbuildable due to these new regulations. So it's got the potential to have some far-reaching impacts. Again, we're going to have quite a bit more staff time. You would think that that would result in higher fees that we would have to charge to implement all these programs, not to mention the ongoing, just year after year, the management and tracking of implementing these rules. I don't know of how we could do it if a state program doesn't fund it. The type of man hours we're talking about, amount of effort here, the only thing that came to my mind would be an assessment district, in a sense, to be able to charge for the services that we would have to provide or what are being mandated by the state. Or it could result in us extending sewers, a developer having to extend sewers into an area that previously could be served by septic systems. They may have to extend sewers. They'll have impacts on our wastewater treatment plant. So not to just go over all this, but the impacts to the city really is this is an unfunded mandate. We do not have the staff. We do not have the revenue or resources to pull this program off. It's a financial train wreck for us. So really, and just to summarize some of the fiscal impacts, these are rough numbers, but program create the implementation of these requirements. Again, the testing and monitoring and inspection, it's hard to even estimate what those numbers would be, but they would be considerable. So it's not a good time for this. And so tonight we're really just requesting for your comments, if we can incorporate those into our letter. We're going to send the message of the things that were in this staff report to the state again, that it's a bad time to be trying to implement something like this. We do not have the staffing or resources to implement it. And here really just to try to incorporate your concerns also. With that, I will take any questions.
Thank you. Well, I think it's unfortunate that we haven't had more time this evening to talk about this. I think if the average person in our community understands this, we would have these chambers filled to overflowing. This impacts all of Atascadero, certainly everyone in Santa Margarita, Creston, all of the rural areas. We're one of the few areas that relies on septic systems, and I think that is as green a practice as you can get. It is truly focusing on a sustainable level at a vision E.G. Lewis had to have independent pieces of property, and we don't have any demonstrated problem. And I'm concerned, I don't know if you touched on, that this also is going to prohibit self-regenerating water softeners. So water softeners are out. Items such as, we don't know what a swale is, but it certainly could include water retention basins that we're requiring to deal with stormwater, and so we're in a catch-22. I'm sure all council members have some comments to address this, but I want to say to the public, I think we need to be very concerned about this, and we're in this tough position of choosing to become a regulatory agent ourselves at a cost to well over $500,000 a year, which is money that we don't have. But the choice is, if we don't do that, we are abdicating that role to a regional water quality control board that seems to be much less sympathetic to these catch-22s that we are being put in with the state of other requirements to meet other needs. So it's going to be something we need to talk about at a council very much more. And I'm just expressing some of my frustration. It's hard to know where to begin. There are so many issues this raises. But with that, I'm going to open up to Councilmember Clay, and we'll just work down the line.
I know you guys are all professionals and everything, and sometimes I read your letters of protest, so to speak, and they're too damn nice, just to be frank. I think this is a time to get... you know, to really get down to the point. And, you know, this is an unnecessary regulation. The economic times, this is impossible for us. You know, I think we got to really let them know. The Municipal Water Company, as I recall, over the past, has never had a negative reading. I think we need to get a letter again from them, you know, and present and that there's never been a problem. I think we need to get our city attorney to address the state mandate on affordable housing and how this will, you know, the second unit is a very important part of our affordable housing, although it is a small portion. Maybe there's some compromises, maybe on property under 2 acres that it can only be one bedroom and one bath or something with a second unit, or only one septic system, or you understand where I'm coming from. I mean, I just think you need to get real aggressive and down to the point and don't miss any words and get after them. And that's my direction.
Well, that about says it for me. Yeah, I don't understand this. I don't know. Something's going on here. Do they want to get rid of septic tanks? Is that their ultimate goal?
I think some of this probably has some issues regarding, I mean, some of the reason why this was developed and so hard, been pushed so hard, is probably has to do with Los Osos. I think they probably feel that, you know, collection and central treatment is a better process. So I think they look at these septic systems as little pockets of pollution all over town, and it's really not. It's just a much more natural process. And again, we do not have a problem. I mean, this is the type of regulation that you would expect to see if you had widespread, you know, septic system failures and you needed much more stringent rules and regulations. We just said a word for it. The Central Coast is, you know, there's areas of Santa Cruz that have already embraced some of these septic system management districts, but those are all areas that have, you know, widespread problems. To answer your question about the statewide, I've looked at 4 or 5 different regional board websites for septic system rules, and I cannot find anything like this in other areas. I looked in the Sacramento region, Central Valley, up by Redding, the North Coast. None of them have gone to this extent. They all have basin plans, but each region has different water quality, you know, hot buttons, so to speak. And Sacramento area, it's all about protecting the Sacramento River and the Delta. And so all of their basin plan seems to focus on that. This seems to be one of the, you know, issues that this regional board has elected and selected to scrutinize more closely.
Well, perhaps we could put something in about that we've been singled out, that we're the only community in the state that has been blessed with this implementation plan. And so why are they picking on us, something along that line?
I will say that the county, I emailed the council today a letter from San Luis Obispo County, and they shared a lot of the same concerns that we did about the cost of implementing this program is just not possible.
Right. I think you've hit on all the points about the cost, and we need to put those in and put them as bullet points on what it's going to cost us and what the impacts will be. I think the question needs to be asked if we have to do this.
I think, worst case, if we made the effort and couldn't pare this down as much as we can to a manageable regulation, we would end up just giving it back to the state and saying, fine, we can't fund this. We can't afford to do it. We're going to give you back septic systems, and then they will have to staff up or find the money to do and to live by these very same rules. So, you know, I think that's going to, you know, as far as bargaining down the road, you know, and what these rules really mean and how what part of it is really implementable is going to be. That'll be our biggest leverage. Is, you know, we can only do so much. And only so much of this is very practical. And if they may end up getting it back in their lap. And I don't know, I can't imagine that's their goal because they've been trying to,
I don't,
you know,
think that would be a problem for the water board. And
Could I piggyback on what Roberta just
go ahead.
Because I think she hit on a really good point. You said there's other water control districts out there that aren't as aggressive or have to. I think it, when you say that they're singling this out, I think if you can state or you know, a couple other districts, doesn't have to be, you know, that have plants that are working and that are not aggressive like this. Because, and the other thing is our soil types and our terrain is, you know, Las Osas is sand. I mean, come on. There's no comparison.
Well, having had a year experience on our Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is a 5-county region, I know the regional board took pride projects such as this back on. I saw a single strawberry farmer lady come before our board, and she was facing a $28,000 fine. And I was just curious to see how you got to a $28,000 fine. It started with a $600 permit that she failed to pay because of tough economic times. And after 6 months, there were some inspection fees added. And then I asked staff to put this on the whiteboard in front of me because I wanted to know, how did you go from $600 to $28,000? And I said, well, I assume we start with the $600 fee. And they said, well, actually, no, because within 6 months, an agricultural group that felt sorry for her paid her $600 fee. So that had been taken care of. But unfortunately, it was not soon enough to not trigger some other bylaw fines and fees where there's bylaw allowed that you can double certain fees, apply staff time, double fees again. And we were faced with this lady with a $28,000 fine before her. The board and I had some concerns about that, and we were able to reduce that to some extent, but it was still thousands and thousands of dollars. And so that's my concern about, sure, people are not going to like us. We don't want to be in the enforcement business, but that's a situation when you're faced at the state level with furloughs and you have a built into the law a way that you can generate fees that have penalties built into the law on, and then that becomes revenue need. We've even spent, I believe, close to $300,000 on a study that shows we don't have a nitrates issue in anywhere near our wells from our wastewater treatment plant, for example. We don't have a demonstrated problem as you do in Los Osos, and we're being forced to direct resources we don't have to fix a problem we don't have. And I think we need to be equally outraged. I'm asking for the council's support, and I intend to go at every level talking to the water board, raising this issue. I've sent a letter to the governor. As you may see, it sounded a little bit more like Jerry Clay might have written it. But I think these are the very issues we've brought up, that this regulation is very expensive, and we need help at a state level on this. We need to apply cost-benefit analysis to these kind of decisions because it's not gaining any benefit for water quality. We don't have a demonstrated problem. These same resources could be directed in other higher-value environmental solutions. So I'm please continue on. I think staff know what we need to do. It's a complex problem, and we're going to have to take it on.
I think this is just another example of a state agency that's running completely out of control. And obviously it appears that they have very little knowledge about septic systems and what they do, and they're trying to correct a problem that doesn't exist. I have no problem challenging them as much as you want to. And I think I would like to go back when we were in Sacramento at the League of California Cities and we were Graham, because it seems like we're possibly an isolated case that's getting over-regulated. And if there's somehow we might be able to get that to him, might be able to correct the problem or at least adjust it. And I think Tom, when we were up there, was very eloquent in his presentation, having served on the water board for a year, and I think he really did listen to us and showed some concern over these ridiculous fees and costs that are being implemented. So you have my permission to go for him. It's a game that I don't want to play in.
Councilmember Sturdivant. Well, Russ, like I told you, I liked what you wrote in your response and your letter that you did back in February. And a question for you is, do you know why the 2008-2009 plans were not accepted or approved by the state? Do you know? Did they say why?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we asked that question and requested that we see the paper trail or documents between the state and the local board, and it's been very difficult to get information back. We did get a handful of emails that were there really wasn't much in them. They referred to documents that they were not going to release because they felt like there was some attorney-client or privileged information in those documents. So we got very little along those lines. It's been difficult to get that information because we've been trying for about the past month to get a flow of information going, and they've been very suspiciously slow. And
We didn't get much back. Excuse me, doing this, and where is this coming from? And which leads me to this. I love this letter from the the County Department of Planning and Building. And the thing that I would really like to probably focus on most is the very last portion, where the gentleman cites a section 13241 of the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act, and it states that if there are factors to be considered by a regional board in establishing water quality objectives, and they shall include but not necessarily limited to all the following, and one of those is economic considerations. So those kind of things. I mean, this seems like this is something in their own rules and regulations. There it is. Because it's like the gentleman from the county said, the county is very concerned about your agency requiring the outlay of this large amount of money during this time of financial crisis. So, there's things right there that says, yeah, we are in a definite time right now. This is unprecedented in my adult life, and you want to put this on our community. We can't afford it. So if there's things like that can come out to be shown, hey, look, this is your own. We're turning your information back on you because it just seems like they haven't done a lot of homework in what they've written. It just seems to ramble and go on and on. So anyway, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Well, at the risk of rambling myself, I have to tell one more anecdotal story because that's basically what I spent my year discussing was cost-benefit analysis. And I go back to when I was an economics major at UCSB, emphasis in environmental natural resource economics, and to show you how long ago that was, my professors were often leaving to go back and testify before Congress on our attorney that assigned to advise us at our region board took all the way up to the state level. They have their whole separate attorney squadron, a lot of attorneys working for the water board. And, it kind of came back that, well, yes, that's a component, but it's not a component that I can see has ever really been implemented. And there is some debate. I know when I was, again, part of why I had a very short year on the water board is there were a couple of groups that challenged my appointment, actually prevented it from going to a Senate hearing. And one of the arguments was, in fact, one of the gentlemen that was opposing me came here and sat in our very city halls here. And one of the issues was is that I was always bringing up cost-benefit analysis as something that should be considered. And that's the very reason why I'm probably not on the water board anymore. And that was something that was at a very high level considered. So that is a good argument. It didn't work for me, but I think we do need to raise that with the legislature. It's an issue, and we may or may not get sympathy. Yeah, sure.
Hey, Russ, you need to let them know that this is an unnecessary regulation, that we don't have the money. I think maybe it's time to threaten them. Look, we'll just have to turn this whole thing over to the state. They can do the whole darn thing if they want to. And you know the state is in probably worse shape than we are. I want to go back to, you know, we have affordable housing guidelines. It's a model. You know, it's they're decreasing it. So I hope you'll follow through on that. And maybe there could – Warren had some – you know, hopefully – I know you talked to Warren. He's sitting right next to you there. And he had some really good ideas when I talked to him. So give him hell, boy. That's all I got to say, okay?
We will definitely do that.
Councilwoman Fonsi.
Very briefly, I wonder if we could put some kind of a cost on for the homeowner, that we have the cost for the city, that we're going to have to do all the admin and regulation and so forth. But let's just say if someone had to put in a new septic tank or leach field, they're not putting in one leach field. They're actually putting in two leach fields and have to have an expansion area just in case for a third. Right. So if we could say it's going to increase cost by whatever for the 5,000 homeowners who eventually will have to replace, I think that that information needs to be in there as well. And this might be more of a city attorney question, but I think we have made some requests under the Freedom of Information Act several times, and we have kept track of that, and Marcia would know this too, but we haven't had the response that we've requested. So I think this may be some type of a rebuttal to their argument as well, that how can we respond to something that we haven't received?
Well, I can check and find out where we are on that.
Thank you.
I will say that they have way more lawyers than we do, but I think it's a good question.
Another good question is there a vendetta against the Tascadero? You know, we went through the creek setback thing, and some of the members on that water board, we beat them down. You know, I'm concerned about a vendetta against us.
I don't see that as much as I think it's a different, you call it overruled staff, but essentially we worked together and came up with a plan that was more standardized with some pre-approved plans, and I thought it was a pretty good solution. I think our problem that we have is because often we're getting the price of our own success. We have pushed to have the largest average lot size of any city I know. We are one of the few cities that I think has worked towards sustainability. We truly have sustainable sites with septic systems. And really, there are no other cities that are in that situation. They're all smaller geographical areas. They've got wastewater treatment plants. So it doesn't really impact other areas as much as it does us.
Tom, you make a good point. I know when Ray Johnson was on the board, yeah, our average lot site was 94, you know, percent of nearly 1 acre.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing. You know, I doubt if there's a community in California, maybe up in Northern California, that has those large lots like we do. So I think that's a very good point too.
Right. Councilman Kelly.
Tom, when you were on the water board, is there any one person or staff member that initiated this? How did this get started?
No, there. You don't have. You've got teams on, and I think, as staff had said, I think it's grown out of looking at a lot of problems with the ag issue. There's issues of nitrates infiltrating in groundwater. You've got saltwater intrusion on the coast. I think the Los Osos issue and groundwater contamination, the very things you're trying to prevent. I think we're kind of in that same boat. We're a unique case, the fact that we have very large lot sizes and we can mitigate in a self-sustaining way the issues that have become problems in other areas. And we got to get someone's attention at a level to allow us to do that. It's going to be some work for us.
I think you brought up a good point about the expansion fields and the dual septic leach lines, and this would have to do with the implementation of AB 32 and SB 375, that they want us to cut back on certain things, but by taking out the trees, we interfere with the carbon sequestration. So it also contradicts those two mandates as well.
I think their solution is you simply can't do it. There'll be areas that simply aren't buildable, aren't expandable, and that will be the solution. Well, we probably have, yes, we need to hear from the public. I wish we had more public here. This is a frustration to us, and we would like your input on how we should proceed. Welcome, first member of the public.
You got it? Okay. My name is Al Fonzi, 7880 Sinaloa. I agree with Councilman Clay. This is not a time to be conciliatory. This is a time to fight. I have reason to believe, based on information that I've come across, that at least one member, one political activist in this community has used their influence of the water board to single out Atascadero for special treatment because we have some of the highest water standards in the state to do an EIR. And if you were to file a suit when the time is appropriate and let them know you're going to do it, demand a full EIR, which includes all of your concerns that you've expressed here tonight. Destruction of trees, for instance, that's a big issue. The fact that it conflicts with state housing mandates. The fact that there's all kinds of other unanswered questions, refusal to answer questions. I would ask for every single email, every phone call, every transcript, every note that they've taken in the last couple of years to come up with this. It's time to fight. It's not a time to be nice. And I would suggest you do it. You've got a court precedent now where this has actually happened this week where their rival state agency or their sister state agency got knocked back on their tail. And I think you can win, at least get them to do an EIR, and you can bring all this up and bring it to the governor and bring it to the legislature, and hopefully they'll come to their senses, although I seriously doubt it. But maybe a judge will change their mind for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hello, Karen Sturdivant, citizen. Mr. Mayor and esteemed council, I'm addressing this to you, but mostly to my fellow citizens out there watching on television. As everybody knows, this country is in a deep recession, and the California economy is on the verge of collapse. We, the citizens, are struggling to pay our bills. Our neighbors are losing their homes. Friends who've been diligently searching for jobs are still unemployed. Choices are being made as to which bills will be left unpaid. Are the children going to be brought home from college, or should we let the house go back to the bank? These are the questions that are being asked by the people of California and by the people of Atascadero. And yet here comes the Regional Water Quality Control Board again. Who are they? Well, they are an independent regulatory body that is not accountable. They are striving for environmental perfection. And they want your money, and they want the city of Atascadero's money. I don't have any money to spare. The city doesn't have any money to spare. And I'm here to ask the citizens of Atascadero, do you have any money to spare? I can hear it now. There goes one of those uneducated Fox News watching people who don't care about the environment. I'm tired, and I'm tired of the citizens of Atascadero being considered anti-environment when they say no to yet another heavy-handed policy being placed down upon them. I do understand, and anybody who wants to discuss my love of this earth can do so when I'm not being timed. Okay, Atascadero, here is the issue. For too long, the discussion's been going the wrong direction. And in these difficult times, it's not about whether or not we care about the environment. For once, we can discuss whether or not the environmentalists care about us. The talk about septic tank inspections and pumping of $400, non-regenerating water conditioning systems, $1,300, replacing septic tanks and leach lines between $5,000, $10,000, and even $15,000. Loss of property value due to creek setbacks, substantial. Perhaps nobody has told them about the people who have no money. Perhaps they're unaware of the people who have no equity in their homes to get loans to try to pay for all this stuff. All of this is for their vision of environmental perfection. Our city council has a difficult decision to make. I would ask that our council, if at all possible, join with other cities and fight these regulatory requirements. And I ask the people of Atascadero to support them in this in any way possible. Now, I know there's some people here in Atascadero who fully support the demands made by the Water Quality Control Board. They share the vision. I respect that.
Maybe Russ can get a few words out of there.
Other members of the public wishing to speak? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment. And I think Russ will just take our best shot at this.
Tom, could I think Clay. This EIR thing maybe is something we should play out.
I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah. Okay, very good there. Let's give them the devil.
Thank you. Well, again, that's just something to have this discussion with. It's more of a sharing of frustration, I know, but we will represent our city before these boards, and I think it's very important to communicate to the legislature. I think that's really the only solution, and we will take that forward of we've got to look at the environmental stewardship and economic survival are really hinged in this case. Thank you for the staff report. Next item is the Historic City Hall Project Addition Alternates. I think we need to have this discussion. I know we have some members of the public that have waited for this. I'm wondering if we are going to be able to put off the housing element, which is the item after that. Is there a need to discuss that tonight?
That can be continued. It's not critical to here tonight.
I'm just thinking for if there's council consensus on that.
I think so.
So we will try to go forward with the Historic City Hall project and get some input. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. The item you have before you tonight is the City Hall project, yet again, staff requirements so that it meets current building codes. That's what's currently in the project. The item you have before you tonight are some other things that staff has thought about possibly doing while we are in the building, while we have this opportunity, if there is available budget. We're looking for council direction to determine whether, you know, what the general priorities of the council are, which of these projects they would like to do, if any. Certainly, if the bids come in low and we have some extra money, we could come in under budget, return that money to the redevelopment agency or the successor agency, whatever it may be, or try and go ahead and get some of these projects done. There's different priorities you could place upon these projects. Some of the projects improve the operational efficiency of the project, of the building. Some of the projects are opportunities that, while it's scaffolded in there, we can get some stuff done to extend the life or to improve the aesthetics of the project. And so really wanted to get a general feeling from the City Council of what their wishes are. Staff will then take those general priorities, see how the bids come in, and try and evaluate the bids on, you know, is this cost effective to do right now? Certainly, if council's number one priority came in very, very high, we may not want to, or higher than the engineers expected, we may not want to award that bid. But what we want to do is kind of get a general consensus from the council of what the priorities are. We have Stephanie Kingsnorth, who you all are all familiar with here, from Pfeiffer Partners, to go over the alternatives with you.
So just to reiterate quickly what Rochelle said, as you know, we've had numerous packages that have been put forth in terms of the drawings. The package that we're talking about now that have these additive alternates listed is the element. So that's where all these add-ons come in. We have not put anything that is unnecessary in that bid package. We have designed things smartly. So as we put something back in, it is appropriate or potentially more in line with the history of the building, but is not giving you any additional cost to do so. We simply have to do it anyway, and so it's going back that way. These, once again, are additive things that you may choose to include if you want to and are really there to enhance some of the usability, some of the aesthetics, some of the human comfort issues that we simply have not put in to date. So there's your quick clarification. Now, in the set of drawings, we have 14 additive alternates, and as we said, we've broken these down to be very specific so that they're easy for the contractors to bid and give you an actual line item. So all of those things are listed here, and we're going to go through each one today and kind of have a brief discussion about why now, why might this be the time to do something, why are we even including it, what's the real purpose of all of these. So this is a quick list, and then we'll summarize again at the end. So the first item in terms of alternate one is a new ADA ramp at the north entry, so right up in this location across from the junior high. That is where the ramp is currently located. It is not ADA compliant, is what has been discovered. In the course of doing the work, we actually have to remove that ramp to gain access to the foundations and the numerous piles that we're installing. What we have worked with FEMA on is actually putting it on the sunken garden side of the building. We're looking at the sunken garden side now being the primary entrance to City Hall, so of course it makes sense to get that replacement ramp on the front door of the building instead of the back door of the building. That's inherently what you want to do related to ADA. Simplest way to explain that, adult. Anything to add, Rochelle? Alternate number two is reopening the lower rotunda overlooks from the second floor, briefly to tell you what that is. Historically, you could see from the second floor down into the rotunda, which is highlighted in red. Right now, they're blocked off. They are drywalled in and plastered in. It's actually not cement, so it's relatively easy to take them out. The only thing to note about this is they are in the stairwell, so we do have to add glazing back in. That's one of the issues related to this. It's a historic enhancement more than anything else. Also, in the lower rotunda, alternate three is basically getting more light into the lower rotunda. As you can see, originally, the luminaires that I'm pointing to right now provided natural daylight into the lower rotunda. This is the amount of natural daylight that comes in right now. What we're proposing is making a light box behind it and introducing artificial light instead of the natural light. Fourth one is decorative painting of the lower rotunda. You saw this during the interiors presentation. The reason we are proposing this, you heard in the last round, and also the dome will already be scaffolded due to the other work that's going on. You are not going to be able to do this again in the future. This is the time to do this if this is something of interest. Alternate number five, you can see in red here, these locations, we're talking about an enhanced acoustical treatment in these areas of flat plaster to help mitigate some of the acoustical elements related to the domed space. We have some of that in the base bid that's mandatory just because of occupying that in a different manner than it was previously used for. This is an enhanced version of that to further mitigate the acoustics. Alternate number six is updated or improved lights. A lot of the door types have been changed out. Apologies, the slides are somewhat hard to see. The original doors are wood, rail, and style. Some of them have been painted. And as some doors have been replaced, there are more of your Home Depot hollow wood doors, not in line with the other doors that are in the building. Recommended is to change them back and go back to the original profile. Alternate number eight, once again, back into the north and south entries. Currently, these ceilings are covered with direct glue acoustical tiles. Recommendation is to take them off and put an acoustical plaster in there instead. We're already removing 4 feet of that ceiling. Continue it on, scrape off the acoustical ceiling tiles, and give a new applique of acoustical plaster. Alternate number nine is related to what was originally the skylight in the upper rotunda in the council chambers. It's been painted over and enclosed and abandoned over the years. Similar to what we're talking about in the lower rotunda, making this an artificial light box. So it's artificially illuminated from behind, not reopening the skylight to get more light into the upper rotunda space. Next alternate also relates to the upper rotunda space. And before the earthquake, this was your lighting up there. This is what we call scalloping. We are recommending adding additional fluorescent light strips so that the light strips stagger and you have a consistent lighting around the rotunda instead of that scalloping effect. Alternate number 11 relates to stain grade wood and stain in lieu of paint grade wood and paint at the upper rotunda, mezzanine, and balcony. Originally it was stained. Over the years it was replaced and then painted. We are already replacing this railing, and it is funded by FEMA. What this relates to is whether or not you strip that wood that we're putting back, restain it, and then stain the new railing as well. So it's a stripping and staining cost, not a wood replacement cost. It's purely a finish. Alternate number 12 is all of the exterior deferred maintenance items that FEMA is not paying for. This is because we're not touching the terracotta. There's certain elements that were literally not damaged in the event. What you see here is organic growth. There are some window sills that were inappropriately done when the fourth floor windows were added, and exposed brick. It's not healthy for the building. The building is going to be scaffolded, fully scaffolded. Once again, this is your time to do it. There is an option with this line item that you could choose to do certain bits and pieces of the deferred items. You don't have to do all of them. You could choose to, say, get rid of all the organic growth on the building. You could choose to, say, repair all of these sills. You don't have to do everything under this line item. It is purely optional. Alternate number 13 relates to landscape restoration and enhancements. One of the primary issues here is restoration of the fountains that were out in the lawn. FEMA pays for grass seed only. This is getting back bushes, any flowering plants, basically upgrading the landscape and enhancing the fountains, or actually restoring the fountains. Alternate number 14 is an enhanced interior lighting scheme. reason for this is currently the lights in there are all box fluorescent fixtures. Historically, they were more of a pendant fixture. There are current lights that are more similar to the historic lights. We're not talking about a replication. We're talking about an off-the-shelf standard lighting fixture that is more in line with what it was historically. So that's throughout the building, in the offices and conference rooms, enhancing that lighting. Your alternates.
Okay. Are you ready, Tom?
Well, yes. I think first off, I don't know if we're going to have any more staff input, and I wonder if we want to, we could ask questions. I do want to get to the public also. So I would limit this to questions of staff at this time. And go ahead, Councilman Clay. Yes, including.
Could you list your five most important items?
In our opinion, it's anything that greatly enhances the visual of the building, enhances the historic nature of it to as many people as possible.
You mean the outside?
So to us, basically in order, and it's also what you can get accomplished because of what you're already doing. So not necessarily in order, but the top three for us, by all means, are the landscape, the painting of the...
Could you give us by number? It would help.
Sure. Let's see here. So number four, which is the decorative painting of the lower rotunda, the landscape enhancements, which is number 13, and then certain elements of exterior deferred maintenance, which is line item 12. And that's just because it's simply the biggest bang for the buck for the most people.
Thank you. That's a valuable input.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
On the electrical upgrades that you're talking about, you mentioned mostly fixtures. Mm-hmm. Is there much wiring that would be required to, is just the fixtures?
It's just the fixtures. The wiring is already being done. It's just that we would literally right now be reinstalling your existing fixtures.
Okay.
Other council questions? A question for you is, I was trying to think through these items because on one hand, use, and maybe there is some value to that in just the utility. Second is some items are just more cost-effective to do at certain times, and you've addressed that as we've gone through. And then third, there's some just relatively low-cost, greatly aesthetic or historic restoration items to consider. And just off the top of your head, with those three things as how I'm trying to look at all of these, do you still think that 4, 13, and 12 would meet all of those? Or
I do. I still believe that those are the top priority. After that, you'd move inside of the building, which obviously if someone doesn't walk into the building, it has less effect for the majority of the population. So then things start to decrease. And related to efficiency of the building, there are some benefits for some of the interior lighting enhancements. You'd be replacing less energy efficient fixtures with more energy efficient fixtures, but is that really worth that trade-off? So that's something for you all to formulate while we prioritize these.
Yeah. And I've always prioritized ADA accessibility everywhere, but what I'm seeing is we are providing ADA accessibility. This would be an additional access, but we would be meeting all legal requirements.
Yes, you're actually doing a major enhancement of the ADA accessibility of the building
throughout,
with the project as a whole.
Yes, thank you. Councilmember Clay.
So on the inside, what would be your three most important issues?
Still biggest bang for the buck, so the lower rotunda, which I...
Which number is that, ma'am?
Depends. Let me get to the elements, and then I'll run through the numbers for you. And I'll acoustic treatment of the lower rotunda, and then number two, reopening the lower rotunda overlooks.
Number two.
Yes, Councilwoman Fonzi.
Stephanie, on number two, the last line says to maintain the required fire rating in the building for exiting purposes. So is this a safety issue as well on two?
It's actually not a safety issue. If we reopen the overlooks, the thing is the building has changed so much over time. There's now an additional stair, and those stairs, that's where those overlooks are. Two of the overlooks are actually in our stair enclosure. We have to have that be a stair enclosure. We can't have that be open to the rotunda space. So what we're talking about is the installation of the glazing that I was mentioning. We can't just have it be open. We have to install a specialized glazing at that point that has a certain fire rating. So it's not that we're just reopening it. We have to put something back in there that maintains the rating but is not a solid wall.
Got it.
So that's why that line item is in there.
Thank you.
Other council questions? Go ahead, Councilman Sturdivant.
Oh. How important is the acoustical treatment for the lower rotunda when it comes to a big room like that and people, like you say, a lot of people come in and that kind of stuff, just the reverberation, sound bouncing around, that kind of thing?
We're already improving the acoustics in there because we're carpeting the room, and that really does have a major effect on the space. Also, in the base bid, we already have fabric-wrapped panels that are going in those locations that I showed you that were highlighted in red. The thing is, they're not a custom-made panel. So it's a panel that you'll see seams on, and it's almost store-bought and then applied. The next step up, which is the first alternate, is to do a custom panel. You won't see any seams. It's thicker. It gives you a better acoustical absorbency, really where you want the acoustical treatment. So it's beefing it up to the greatest extent possible just by using the walls.
Thank you.
Sure.
Councilman Kelly.
It's amazing. I think we all agreed pretty much on all the numbers here, what I had down. Although number 11, the stain grading of the wood, you know, I know when we go to the state capitol, it's absolutely beautiful, yeah. Those railings there we have. And this is kind of a one-time chance to do that, isn't right. it?
It is. And it really relies on whether or not when the contractor gets in there and strips it out, takes out that mezzanine because it has to come out for the structural repairs. If we find that it was stain grade, because our eyes might be deceiving us in those photographs, it might have been painted. It might be brown paint, and we just don't know that at this point in time. If they take it out and it's discovered that it's stained, then that's when that alternate might be able to be considered or taken into effect. We really don't want to upgrade the building beyond what it originally was for those types of things. We don't want to falsify history.
Very good. Public. Thank you, Stephanie. We'll open up to the public.
Good evening again. My name's David Bentz. I live in 3F Meadows, and I wish to read a letter into the record. I request that this letter be read into the official minutes of the City Council meeting on March 22, 2011, regarding the agenda item on the Historic City Hall Project Additional Alternatives. City staff is requesting the Council to give direction by providing a priority ranking of the attached list of alternatives regarding the costs to the Historic City Hall rehab projected uses. The costs were detailed by Phase 1 of $3,343,000, Phase 2, $19,773,000, Phase 3, $5 million, construction and hazardous material mitigation, $1,310,000, construction management, inspection and permitting, $2,810,000, as well as architecture and engineering of $5,070,000, and a contingency of $5,620,000. The total was $42,926,000. The $42,926,000 does not include the interest cost of the $16,010,000 bond issue, which is $17,795,684.38. When added to the estimated construction and management costs, total $60,721,684.38. That's without adding your items that you're looking at right now. You add the items that you're looking at right now, and the City Hall rehab jumps up to $61,671,684.38. To, if you add in one of the options, comes up to another total of $61,682,884.38. Additional cost to the architects and the construction management firm because their remuneration is based on total construction cost. If you want to know what I think those additional costs would be over and above what you would do if you didn't have an architect or a construction management firm, it adds up to about $190,000.
Thank you. We have exceeded our time.
Okay. Just one closing statement. The cost to the taxpayers of Atascadero was over $61,600,000 for City Hall rehab. Remember that the federal government FEMA money comes from Atascadero taxpayers also.
Thank you for your input and for providing us your information in writing. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hello again. I'm Len Colomarino, an Atascadero resident. I hope you can find the money for this, whether you find it through cost underruns, that is wishfully thinking that maybe some of the costs that are expected don't turn out to be as much as forecast. I hope that's a source of some money, maybe through the bond issue, maybe through redevelopment agency funds. Whatever, I think these are important things to do. This is a singular opportunity here. The building is going to be repaired. It's like doing a renovation of your house. You're going to have the people on the premises doing the work. This is the time to get it done. And what other way is there to get it done but to get it done right? It's also a one-time opportunity. This is the identity of our city. Just like Councilman Kelly was talking about when he looked at the state capitol, these buildings command attention. These represent the community. It's being worked on now. It's being brought back to life. Let's do it right. To the extent possible, I hope you can do every one of these items. It would be good to have a prioritization set out. It sounded to me like the priorities that were being set made perfect sense, and I was in agreement with them as I heard them mentioned, but it would be good to see them listed that way so that the money is applied in the order of those priorities. But I hope you can do every single one of these things. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Welcome, Mr. Wilkins, president of our Atascadero Historical Society.
Jim Wilkins, president of Atascadero Historical Society. I'll try to wake up for this. I kind of echo Len on his comments. I think it's kind of everyone's been saying a one-time deal. It is a lot of money, no doubt. Like number, was it 13 on the fountains? Maybe that's something, you know, the Historical Society can get involved with, some kind of fundraising. You know, do a drive. You know, do those have to be done right away? You know, maybe not. Maybe the landscape goes in, and that's something we can pull off to the side. The lower rotunda, I think it'd look awesome. Was it ever painted in colors? We know it was always white when you don't have the money. But when you look back and you know that you did the right thing, that's a better pat on the back than snapping your fingers saying, you know, I should have did that. Because I heard my Grandpa Gates say that a lot when he ran Eagle Ranch. He snapped his fingers a lot out there, saying, I should have did that. I could have reached that goal. I think we can reach the goal if we put our minds to it. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Mr. Mayor, council members, my name is Sandy Jack. I'm a resident of Atascadero. Our reality is that we are deficit spending in an economic environment that is uncertain at best. We have already encumbered our city hall with over $60 million to restore our city with over $60 million to restore the old city hall. We have limited resources that will only last another 4 years. With all of this said, we should minimize any additional dollars committed at this time to the city hall project, because primarily they're nice to haves, they're not needs. And a lot of citizens out there are having to do the same thing. They're having to put aside the nice to haves because the reality is the needs outweigh those. Please stop spending.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Tom Lewis,
Vice President of the Tascadero Historical Society. So I encourage you to let's do all that we can do while we can do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other members of the public approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council.
Yeah, I have a question. Did I miss something? We're going to do these things if we go under budget. Is that not right?
I think that was the suggestion.
I mean, we're not. This is not an add-on.
That's correct.
If we go under budget, and I certainly can support that. You know, I think about the realignment of 41 Highway, how they fought it and fought it, and the minute it was in, I never heard one person complain about that realignment. Sunken Gardens was the same way. We cut all kinds of heck for that, and once it was in, everybody said it was beautiful. The Lewis Avenue Bridge, similar. Sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and do things that are right. So I support this if we're under budget and we can do a few of these things or all of them, I support it.
Well, thank you. And I would like to ask Rochelle to maybe comment on a couple items. It was referenced that we're deficit spending. It's a $60 million project, and that this might actually increase our overhead expenditures if we if we were funding some of these. And I think you addressed a little bit with Councilman Clay's question, but could you comment on those items and make sure we're thinking correctly?
To start with the deficit spending and where is the city money coming from, the project is currently budgeted to be about $40 million to $42 million. The city's share of that is projected and budgeted to be about 30 CalEMA, which is a state agency, and FEMA.
Let me follow up on that because I often hear $60 million. I think that's a concern a few people have, but that's not a number we have come up with at any time.
It sounded like tonight that the speakers were adding in the interest costs. That is not typically when you're looking at project costs. What you do right away when people talk about projects. When you buy a house, you talk about your house price, not what you'll eventually pay in interest.
That'd scare anybody.
Yeah. Certainly they can look at it that way, and that is not a wrong way to look at it. We will be paying, the redevelopment agency will be paying interest on those bonds, which
over
a
time,
large part
sure.
did go to this. I think we talked about deficit spending. The general fund is deficit spending right now. We are using our reserves. We're using our reserves in a planned way in order to get through this downturn. But there are no general funds going towards this project.
We're not actually borrowing money to pay our day-to-day operations.
No.
Sometimes folks define that as deficit spending. What we've done is we've saved money in good
Correct.
Times before. We're spinning down reserves.
Absolutely.
But we're not adding debt to finance our day-to-day operations.
Absolutely. Very well said. Sorry about that. You're absolutely correct and better terminology.
But Tom, my question is if we're, you know, when we go under budget on items, that's the money we save. That's what we could use to do these 14 items.
That's one of the questions. So
yes.
We've got about three questions I threw at her, so I think she's going to come back around to that.
I want my architect and construction manager to lower those costs. So we negotiated flat fees in time and material. I forgot the other questions. I apologize.
Well, I think you'd answered it twice, but Councilman Clay raised the question of, at this point, the city is putting in potentially $13 million on
Correct.
This project. And if we come in below budget, which we have on a number of areas because construction costs have been down, we have had savings in a lot of areas. I think what Councilman Clay was wanting to be assured is that when we're looking at these potential items, these would be within this existing budget numbers.
That is correct. If the bids come in really nice and we get some bids that are better and below the estimates, we'd like to award some of these alternates. We're doing the largest bid package is a blind bid, which is a little bit different, but what it does is we don't tell the contractors which alternates we're awarding on. We look and see what prices come in and what we can afford to do based on the bids once they come in. There's a procedure in the public contract code that allows us to do that, and we will be following that. So this prioritization gives us an idea of We know what we can spend on this package. We know what the other packages are going to come in at, certainly by the time we do that. So this will allow us to say, okay, we can afford to do these three alternates within this package and within our budget of $13 million, still allowing for a healthy contingency and everything else. So that is the intent, is to do all of this, or to do whatever council directs within the $13 million.
Okay, one more question, Council.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase. We've already saved some money, right?
We already have saved some money. Don't know off the top.
By a couple of members in the public is the fact that even if we're below budget, being further below budget is something to consider in tough economic times, and I certainly understand that. I look at this like telling Galaxy to stop spending money. Well, actually, we want them to spend money because we look at it as a revenue-generating asset. I'm glad we spend money on keeping Hearst Castle restored in California. It's a tourism revenue generator. I've been involved in a couple of historic building restorations myself, and it makes a difference marketing it as a historic structure compared to others. And I think we are having to adjust our thinking in Atascadero that we've become more of a destination. I'm seeing it in a lot of areas.
Tom, I am historic, okay?
You are historic, and we're glad we keep
you. Could I make a suggestion? Could we fill these out and bring them in, you know, like fill them out at home instead of doing it tonight? You know, one of the former mayors told me never do anything after 11, and we're getting very close.
We are approaching that. Yeah. I think, let me ask, I'm thinking we might be pretty close because I actually like the input we got, and we may be able to give some direction. But let me check with staff if that's a reasonable idea that we get this back to you. I'm concerned that it would take another meeting. We'd need to go through a public process again, and we might want to take a shot at it now.
Correct. We are opening on the bids on April 7th. We'd like to get some general council direction before that April 7th meeting. We don't.
X is that, or I would, at least gets us.
Why don't we? Why don't we off the top? If we each picked five, you see, you do a forced choice prioritization from that. Usually, when we've done this, we are already in agreement, and it saves a lot of time. Would that be all right?
So, what's the problem with picking all 14 and turning it in later?
Because they have a deadline when they're
well, like tomorrow, I can turn mine in. I hate to do something.
Brian, this is a question for you. Is it if we get those choices from them and basically evaluate the bids based on those choices without those choices being in a public meeting? Is that a problem?
Well, it'd be preferable to have the direction from them this evening if possible.
Okay, I withdraw my...
I think we need to do that.
Okay, let's go.
I would suggest we each pick our top five, and then if there's some that don't get picked, we can have some discussion. But let's see how we go.
How about six? That's what the lady gave us.
I'm with you. Okay, we're going to start with, who would we like to start with? Councilman Kelly.
I'll go 4, 13, 12, 3, 5, and 11.
Russ, do you have the spreadsheet that you could pull up?
Getting pretty late for that.
Okay.
That's okay. Well, I will go with 4, 13, 12, 3, 5, and 2.
12, 13, 3, and 2. How many I got?
One more.
Too many?
Five.
One more.
I was telling
okay,
you.
I'll go with 11 then. Okay. And then I will go with anything that's not over $15,000.
Okay. Well,
anything
we'll
else that's not over
$15,000. So Councilman
Sturdivant. Right. I will go with number 4, number 12, number 13, number 2, number 10, and number 11.
I think we've made this easy for you. I think.
Okay,
So if you want to do a forced choice ranking, and I think that will probably be fine for us.
I think that gives us enough direction. I want to make sure two councils comfortable if we get some good prices on some of the other one, that we can get them very cheaply. We might bring that in as well for the alternate. You'd have the choice to choose or not choose.
Is there a consensus that if we come in under budget and these items could be included?
Yes.
It's a unanimous.
Okay, that helps. Thank you very much.
Okay. We are approaching 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We have eliminated item C3. Mm-hmm. I think we can try to conclude before 11 if we push through this. I would like to start with Councilman Sturdivant, work this way. And first we're going to do committee reports, and then we will come back to any individual. And I know you want to bring up an item under individual determination. Excuse
me. A couple days ago I sent all of you a email regarding the San Luis Obispo County Visitors Conference Bureau. As I'm the representative on the Economic Vitality Corporation, and Noreen Martin, who's kind of the head of this group, has requested that we submit a letter to the county supervisors in order to obtain funding for this group. And I've got replies from Roberta and Brian to go ahead with it. I think it's a very good thing that we should support, and I would like to make sure that I have the support of the city council as I represent them.
And, well, I think you do. Again, this would be the time to give direction to council. Am I correct, Mr. City Attorney?
Yes.
And so I would, that's why I wanted to bring it up tonight, is that if we're going to have a council member take direction representing all of us, we should give that direction at an open council meeting. And I think we have consensus that we support VCB and EVC's request to support that. So you not only can you write a letter on behalf of yourself, you're representing all of us. Right.
Well, there's a form letter here that,
yeah, I think
that,
you could go ahead.
That I'll use. I just wanted to make sure that I had the consensus of everybody and spoke for the council and not really for myself as a representative.
Yep.
There. Great. Thank you.
You are. Thank you. I will just mention we have Bike Month coming up, and I'm going to challenge all of you to go ahead and get your bikes ready, let alone our own bodies. But I would like to see us do something together on bikes during Bike Month, whether we ride ourselves down here to a council meeting, ride around to make sure we have information available about the opt-out option on smart meters. It's come up a few times. I think that's just having that available. We might try to understand that. I can talk with staff. What I understand is if it's true that the Public Utilities Commission has an opt-out option they've approved, that would be good to know about it.
Hey, Tom, in regards to that, you know, I'd like to hear both sides of the story. You know,
yes.
I mean, it's one thing for you know, the public to get up.
I understand that.
And I'd like to hear from PG&E you know.
I made that request, and they are doing a number of public forums around the county, because I brought this up at a mayor's meeting months ago, and PG&E, in fact, Jim Patterson complimented them on that at their board meeting. So that information is available, and we could maybe make sure that folks are aware of those opportunities.
You don't want them to come before us, is that what you're saying?
We could do that. They have their best experts. They've tried to get it in regional areas. We could get a reduced report from some of their staff at a council meeting, and I have suggested that. However, to really get better information, if you go to one of their regional meetings, you'll have the national experts speaking on some of these topics that have been raised.
Okay. I'd rather have them come to me than we have to go to them. You know,
sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's something we can take a look at. Looking at the committees, we are having a Regional Transportation Authority subcommittee.
That also.
Yeah. Well, that's with Council of Governments. But we met with Ed King today, who's the executive director with Regional Transportation Authority, which deals with our Route 9 and some of those choices that are going to have to be addressed soon. So we'll bring that back. And I will pass on the rest. Council.
No committee reports, but I was sitting down getting ready to send out a sympathy card to Doug Filippone,
yes,
who is a pretty prominent citizen and does a lot of fundraising for very good causes in Atascadero, and wondered if perhaps the council would like to do a sympathy card.
Very appropriate. Thank you. And I'm sure we would all concur if Marsh, our city clerk, would prepare that. That's something we would all express our deep sympathy for the family. Yes. Thank you, Roberta, for bringing that up.
Okay. Yeah, I have one light thing and one heavy thing. In regards to the 58 restaurants that we have in Atascadero, and I forgot to mention that the people from Paso Robles that come here to see, the theater, the Galaxy Theater, that they eat in our restaurants and enjoy our wonderful restrooms. Restrooms also, you know.
We are
and now the heavy portion is in regards to what Roberta had to say. Doug and Kathy Filippone lost their son, and I know from personal experience this is a really tough thing. And I just would like to see that the folks out there keep the Filippone family, in their prayers and be thinking about them, because they're going through some really tough times right now. And like I say, the Filippone family have been an important part of Atascadero.